Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
How you doing this week, pal?
I'm just dandy. How are you?
I'm not bad. I'm not bad. I got a little story to tell you and everyone out there. This past weekend, I went out to dinner with some friends, and as we are wont to do, we were chit chatting, and the bill comes, and the server, who was awesome all night, asks us what we're doing on the weekend, and I made mention of the fact that I was going to the Ticats game, and he was like, oh, I'm an Argos fan, and I jokingly said, well, I won't let that affect your tip. And so he actually sat down and started talking to us, and he gave us a story about why he was an Argos fan. Apparently something to do with him and his dad were at a grocery store, and Damon Allen was there, and Damon Allen and this guy's dad talked about melons for like 10 minutes. And it was, you know, hey, he had a nice interaction with a player, and he's like, I'm going to cheer for that guy's team. So that's kind of how it went. And then he started talking about players that have come into the restaurant, and he mentioned two guys. And the first was Chad Kackert, just saying, you know, Chad Kackert came in here, and like, just an awesome dude, really down to earth, just a cool guy, which, you know, seeing it makes sense thinking of, if you think of what Chad Kackert's probably like in real life, I think, you know, cool, down to earth dude is probably exactly how I would have described him. Mm-hmm. And then he mentioned that one of our favorite players, Ricky Foley, came in and was the complete opposite of Kackert. Just a, to quote the guy, he called him an effing douchebag.
Shocker.
Yeah. And just said that he was rude to staff, rude to other patrons, and essentially when he left and paid his bill, the manager came out and pretty much told him, please do not return. He was that bad of a customer. As I'm sure people who will be listening to this know, you and I are no great fans of Ricky Foley, and this is just further confirmation that he is more than likely a complete dick.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. When I went to the Moncton game, the first touchdown Atlantic in Moncton, it was Edmonton, Toronto. I was there with my father. We were at a local establishment where they're having the Argos get together. We were there in our Ticats gear, but it was all good, you know. Everyone was getting along, and a couple of the players showed up, Ricky Foley being one of them, Chad Owens being one of them as well. I came up to Chad Owens, and he was actually really nice. So, you know, that's why I don't have as much hate as for him as you do, because he's actually a really nice guy when I met him in person.
Well, that's good.
Yep. But Ricky Foley was not. I came up to him and offered to shake his hand. He did not shake my hand, and he gave me a dirty look. So
he refused a handshake?
Yeah. I was wearing all my Ticats gear, but, like, you know, still, like, I came up friendly, and he was a total dick. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Who is he? Ric Flair? Like, look, I not to steal your thunder, but I met Jason Moss at the 100th Grey Cup, and I was decked out in Ticat gear, and I got to imagine he hasn't had a lot of great interactions with Ticat fans, because his tenure here was less than good, to be polite. But yes. I extended my hand and said, nice to meet you, good luck on Sunday, because I believe he was on the coaching staff of the Argos at the time, quarterback's coach or receiver's coach, something like that. And he said, thanks, and like, it was a short interaction, but I can't believe that you would extend your hand to someone to be like, hey, how's it going, and they wouldn't shake it. Like,
you know, it's most of the CFL players you meet are pretty good guys, but not in this case. So, you know, it is what it is. I guess he's just not a nice person.
I'm kind of I feel a little bad now about ripping Chad Owens after your little nice interaction with him, but I definitely do not feel sorry about ripping Ricky Foley, because yeah, here we go. We just, you know, evidence upon evidence that he's just an asshole. So
it's easy to hate him because he's an Argo, but on top of that, he's not a very nice person.
Yeah,
so
seems like a jerk. So
yeah.
All right.
Moving on.
Wow, just. This, we're talking about this. We're going to talk about this BC Hamilton game, and that's the only thing that came to my mind first was just wow, that was maybe the most dominant performance I have ever seen from a team. I can't tell you since when that was. Holy boy, just man, like what do you think? Like wow, yeah. Just wow. I can't keep saying it. Wow.
You know, I'm not one of these fans that if you know Hamilton's really bad, I'm not going to keep saying like oh you know they're still a good team. You know that we went through those bad years, and I'd say. They suck, you know. This team is impressing me so much. I haven't seen a team like this from the Ticats, like, ever, I don't think. Maybe 98-99, but just all three phases have been dominant, and I'm just really, really excited about this team right now.
Yeah, you mentioned all three phases. They scored in all three phases of the game I think that's the second time this year they've done that. TSN came up with a stat that the Ticats defense and special teams have scored 11 touchdowns this year, and all the other eight teams combined have scored 12
Wow.
non-offensive touchdowns. That is just ridiculous. And this defense, let's start with the defense, because that to me, we'll get to the offense in a bit because they were awesome as well, but we got to start with this defense. And Andrew Harris came into the game, league's leading rusher. I've been pumping his tires, talking about how he should be MOP, and they completely shut him down. 8 carries for 36 yards rushing. They gave up 86 total yards rushing in the game. More than their season average, but still, when the guy who is leading the league in rushing comes in and he is a complete non-factor, they're doing something right.
Yeah, once again, stuffing the run. He had two fumbles early on, so that was a big swing in momentum early on in the game. He was just completely stuffed, and like you said, like maybe the best player in the league up to this point was just taken out of the game completely.
And we got to talk about two more defensive touchdowns. One of those fumbles that Harris had, Eric Norwood scoops up and takes to the house. And then later in the game, Eric Harris has the pick that he takes to the house. And this defense has now scored 7 touchdowns this season. And in doing a little research for the show, I found out that on the season, the Ticats have given up 13 touchdowns, but only 12 have come defensively. There was the pick six in the first game by Keon Raymond. So the defense has scored 7 touchdowns and have allowed 12 touchdowns through 7 games. They're essentially scoring a touchdown for every two that the opposition is scoring. You're going to win a lot of football games if that keeps up.
Yeah, the defense keeps scoring like this. We're gonna have a pretty good record at the end of the season because the offense is clicking, special teams is doing its thing, and if all three phases keep scoring, I mean, look out.
Okay, so let's talk about the offense, okay? Zach Kolaros throws 4 touchdown passes and threw 4 incompletions. I think it's time that we. I know you and I have been, on the Kolaros bandwagon all season. We have, we did give him a little bit of a grief for his poor outing in Montreal, but since that game, he has been on fire.
Yeah, he's just not throwing picks either. So that's, if you don't turn over the ball, then that's a huge advantage for the team. And just the percentages he's clicking at and the touchdowns that he's throwing, these last couple of games have just almost perfect games for Claros.
He seems to be in complete control and complete command. And the big thing for me is they are finally going deep. It seems once or twice a game they're heaving those balls up there. 2 weeks ago against Winnipeg, it was Terrence Tolliver for a big touchdown. And this week, it was Taquan Underwood who that catch on the 58-yard touchdown pass, the over-the-shoulder catch, was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I thought for a second that he might have overthrown him, but it was a beautiful catch, and it just shows that with the injuries out, players can come in and we won't miss a beat on offense. So that's good to see that depth, that receiver position.
Yeah, next man up, right? Like, it doesn't seem to be the injuries this team has suffered to star and starter players doesn't seem to be hurting them at all.
No. Tasker had a huge game. That catch in the end zone was just gorgeous.
Oh, the fingertip. Oh, I know. You're telling me. And the one of the catches from him that I really liked was it was about in the middle of the field. He caught it, dipped his shoulder to evade the BC defender, and then took off and probably got tackled around the 30 or 25-yard line. I don't really remember, but
Yeah.
these guys are, they're slipping out of tackles and they're making guys miss and they're just making plays, and it really, really, really makes me feel like this team is about to do something really special.
Yeah, and they're moving the ball so well without a running game, essentially. So if they ever get that running game going, that's just another dimension to the offense that'll really help the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of dimensions, we got to talk about Brandon Banks. Another punt return for a touchdown, so he's at 3 on the year. He's no longer on pace, I don't think, to get the 10 I said he would get, but it was nice to see him break one again and actually have it count. And, but we got to talk about that first touchdown. Solomon Alamimian is coming downhill on him, and he essentially dips the shoulder and drops him and then drops Ronnie Yell, and then boom, he's off to the races. That's not supposed to happen. Alamimian unfortunately got hurt later in the game and it, torn Achilles, looks like he's out for the year. But he, reigning MOP, reigning most outstanding defensive player, you're not supposed to get trucked like that by a guy who's barely 150 pounds.
No, you know, I missed that play because I went to a friend's house to watch the game, and he only had TSN 5, which is the, you know, the regional TSN in this area, and they were showing friggin' golf, so we had to hop in a cab and go to a sports bar to catch the game, and I just got there as they're kicking the extra point, so I missed that play live, but I did see the replay, and he did really, like, put his shoulder right into him and just squirmed out of the tackle, and, you know, the best tackler in the league, he gets out of it and just runs down the sideline for the touchdown, and, you know, he doesn't get used a lot in the offense, but when he gets in there, he shows that he can be, you know, a threat in the offense as well as the special teams.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, this performance that he had, it really, like, he had a couple nice handoffs. And he had that, like, that touchdown was just awesome. So I wonder if maybe they're going to try to phase him into the offense a little more, especially with some of these injuries, you know, to Gable. I know he's not a receiver, but, you know, he's a great pass catcher out of the backfield. Fantuz, like, these guys are nicked up. And, you know, Grant, Bakari Grant, unfortunately didn't play this game, who I think has been Hamilton's best receiver for probably most of the season. So maybe with some of these guys going down, we might see a little bit more Brandon Banks in the offense, which I don't think is a bad thing.
No. And Sinkfield in there is not a bad thing either. So, like I said earlier, the depth is just amazing right now.
Yeah. One more thing before we move on. As we both know, this three-game homestand was butt kicking after butt kicking after butt kicking. But I'm not sure if people realize just how dominant this Ticats team has been. In those three games, they outscored their opponents 124 to 48. And to put that in perspective, that would be an average score of 41 to 16. You're not going to lose many football games or even be in many football games if you're getting smacked around that bad. That's just, I knew the numbers would be high, but even that impressed me.
Yeah, that's domination right there. That's we got something to be excited about if you're a Ticat fan right now.
Yeah, and look, at no point in any of these last three games did they ever trail. They were always up. I don't even think they were tied. At any point, I think the last time this team was down was entering the fourth quarter against the Rough Riders, which was at the end of July. So the month of August has been really, really good for the Ticats. They're the league's top scoring team, and you know, we've touched on, you know, the points they've scored on defense and special teams, so it's not all the offense, but their point differential is 107. They've scored 107 more points than they have given up. That is astounding.
Yeah, and I think I heard that they're the number one team scoring in the red zone this year. I believe I heard that. I'm not positive, but if that's true, that's, you know, going from last to first is just remarkable improvement.
Well, that's just, you know, it's one less thing that we can really point to that they can improve on. It was one of those things, I don't know if you read my game recap post on 3 Down Nation after the game, but, you know, I do this thing where I'll talk about, you know, the things I liked about the game and the things I didn't like, and I simply put down for the quote-unquote negatives. I didn't have any from last game. There was, could we nitpick and say, oh, Justin Medlock missed a field goal and an extra point. The field goal was from like 54 yards. And the extra point, you know, it's, what was there really to pinpoint from that game against BC that, that they could improve on? I didn't see any, like, obviously the team and the coaching staff are being like, it wasn't a perfect game, and that's great that they always want to improve, but as a fan sitting in the stands, that was, like I said to start this section off, that was one of the most dominant performances by any team that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I guess if you really wanted to nitpick, you could say the lack of a running game, maybe, but, you know, when the score is what it is, you can't really, you know, if they ran the ball, whatever, it doesn't really matter because they kicked the crap out of them, so.
Yeah, and the lack of a running game has been their problem
forever.
For what, 6 of the 7 games without CJ Gable? And yeah. I guess the Argos game, they ran pretty well with Anthony Woodson. So in 5 of the 7 games, a lack of a running game has been a problem. And they're 5-2. They haven't been 5-2 since the year 2000. So what a difference a year makes, eh? At this point last year, we were sitting here and they're 1-6. And I think we all knew that they were better than that record, but it didn't seem like they were able to win the close ones, and they've lost a couple close ones. It was a 4-point loss to Montreal and a 1-point loss or a 2-point loss to Calgary, something like that. So, but the way that they're just hammering teams and, you know, showing no mercy, it's foot on the throat, and you know what? You're dead. We're still going to kick you when you're down. It's big things that I think are coming from this team this year, Mike. Big things.
I agree. What did you think about them taking out Claros in the fourth? I liked it. I think that, with a lead like that, Claros doesn't need to be in there.
Completely agree. The week before, they kept him in, even though they were, stomping a mud hole in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And after the game, Ken Austin said that they kept him in because the offense didn't have any rhythm in the second half. And he was right. The offense scored 0 points in the second half. I still think I would have liked to have seen Claros come out because I think he's a good enough player where he doesn't necessarily need to find a rhythm. But in this game, it was a no-brainer. He was awesome. The offense was awesome. The whole team was awesome. There was no reason to keep him in there. Get Matthews some reps, and I was actually I liked what I saw to Jeff Matthews too. So
yeah, so did
you know,
I.
it's nice to see the backups come in, and even if it's in garbage time, show a little something. So knock on wood, if Caleros ever gets hurt, Ticats might not be as out of it with Jeff Matthews at quarterback. And now we've seen him play in a regular season game, and that's good for him too for his development. So. Yeah, I'm all for the pulling at that point because what was it 50 it was probably 51-12 at the time or whatever the score was, so like it was over. So
I liked it as well, and I was also impressed with Matthews. I liked Matthews in the preseason game, but preseason's hard to tell. So if something happens to Claros, cross your fingers that it doesn't. I still have confidence in the team with Matthews at the helm. So. That's a good thing to have good backups.
absolutely, sir. So for this might be the first time ever, we're going to talk about our bold predictions. And man, this was we were pretty good this week. You had Travis Lule throwing for under 150 yards and three touchdowns, and
Three
or three
picks.
interceptions, I'm sorry, three interceptions, whoops. And Lule threw for 139 yards and two interceptions.
Pretty close.
Yeah, three interceptions is a lot. I will give you that. But man, that's a that you went bold with probably with the three picks, but nice call, nice call.
That was probably my closest so far this year, so.
Hey, you know what? Maybe this just means we're getting better.
Yeah.
Because I said that the Ticats would hold Andrew Harris under 70 yards rushing, and as we've talked before, put up 36. So that's a like a full blown actual correct prediction from me. And
Yeah.
hey, here we're doing it, buddy. We're getting there. I think 1 week you're gonna nail it. So this maybe now we're let's put a little streak together.
Yeah, maybe this week I'll get my bold prediction correct.
So let's move on to some CFL news. Have you been following this Jasper Simmons thing with Calgary?
Yeah, I checked it out. It's pretty interesting stuff.
Ian Busby, one of the guys who works for Three Down Nation, has a great piece sort of piecing it all together, and this is getting weird.
Yeah, well, people out there probably know, but I guess Jasper Simmons' agent started tweeting out stuff that, Jasper's not playing and Calgary Stampeders are the worst organization in the CFL and blah, blah, blah. This is pro sports. If the coach doesn't think that you're the best player on the field, then you're not going to play. So I don't really have any sympathy for him, It's pro sports. Okay, you got to get used to it.
I'm not. Simmons wants to play, and I think that's every player should want to play. I remember when we down here were dealing with the Chris Williams thing, a lot of people were like, "Oh, he'd rather be a practice roster player and make $400,000 than play and make $200,000." So it's one of those things where it seems like it's a moving target when we criticize players. I'm not going to blame Simmons for wanting to play. The problem is that he got traded to a team that was essentially set at linebacker. So he was always going to be a depth player, and I think maybe for a guy who, was an MOP and most outstanding defensive player candidate for his team last year, that might be a bitter pill to swallow.
I agree, but that's just the way it is, If he's not good enough to be the starter, then that's the way it is. So I understand that he wants to play, but the way it goes sometimes.
My only real problem that came about of this whole thing was Bo Levi Mitchell inserting himself into it. Again, I'll go back to the Chris Williams thing. When he had his beef with the Ticats a few years ago, the one thing you didn't see was teammates stepping in and saying anything.
No.
And from all reports, everyone seemed to sort of support Williams because, everyone wants to get paid. So Williams, tried to get out of his contract. Like, we don't have to go through the whole thing, but what I liked is that you never saw anyone played with him come out and rip him for abandoning the team or what have you. But Bo Levi Mitchell sent a tweet to Jasper Simmons saying, "Damn, you really trying to say you want to be somewhere else? Smarten up, Jasper. You a good player." That's fine, but Simmons, it's not just that he wants to be somewhere else because he wants to play. And if he thinks another team will give him a chance to play and Calgary won't, I don't understand why Mitchell would have a problem with that. And I think Mitchell should have just kept his mouth shut. This is not his business. And it kind of really annoyed me that he would insert himself into this.
Yeah, I'd have to just totally agree with that. It doesn't have anything to do with him. You know, Jasper Simmons is a football player, but he's also, you know, his own business. So he didn't have any right to get involved, in my opinion. So.
And then there was the whole Markwave McDaniel, Maurice Price aspect of this that got out of hand. There's just,
Yeah.
this thing is, you don't usually see this thing coming out of Calgary. They run a pretty tight ship. So this is kind of surprising. It was entertaining and kind of funny, but how does Jasper Simmons go back into that locker room essentially having said, I don't want to be here anymore? Like,
Yeah, it's gonna be tough for him to be back with that team. I mean, maybe they make a trade or something, because maybe someone's looking. You know, Jasper Simmons is a good linebacker, so maybe they can make a trade. But I can't see him getting along with many of his teammates after this episode. And I guess McDaniel and Price had some heat while they're in Calgary, because McDaniel kind of came out of nowhere and said Price can only run go routes. He's not a very good receiver, so that was interesting to see.
it made me laugh. It made me laugh. But yeah, maybe a team like BC thinks of bringing in Simmons now that they've unfortunately lost Solomon Elamimian for the year with a torn Achilles. They might be in the need of a veteran linebacker. And like you said, Simmons is a good player. And I know people are like, oh, he was an award candidate on a 2-16 team and on a defense that was always on the field, but he still made a bunch of plays. And I don't know, maybe that, some guys have a good year and then, never play again. And some guys need a good year to sort of establish themselves. And obviously he has a lot of faith in his skills. So hopefully we see him on the field soon because I think he's a good player, but I don't know if it'll ever be with the Stampeders.
Yeah, it doesn't look that way.
All right. So let's get to the games of the week that did not involve our Hamilton Tiger Cats, the Edmonton Eskimos, in what I think was one of the worst games of the season, a pretty boring contest between them and the Owls. The Eskimos escaped Percival Molson Stadium with a win. The one question I have for you, Mike, coming out of this game is, has the league figured out Rakeem Cato?
Kind of, yes. I mean, you know, the Eskimos defense is a hell of a defense, so I think Cato was under pressure all game long. He didn't have much time to make decisions, get rid of the ball. So I still have confidence in Cato. I still think he's an up-and-coming player. I don't think we're going to see a huge plummet from him, although his last couple games haven't been the greatest, especially this game. So partially, I think they figured it out, but I still think he's going to have some good games going forward.
That seems fair. Like you said, this was definitely his worst game of the season, and it came against, if not the best defense, then the second best defense in the league. We could argue all day, is Edmonton's defense better than Hamilton's? Hamilton's better than Edmonton's, but Edmonton's defense is amazing. So he came on like a house of fire back in week two against the
Calgary.
Stampeders. So it was making me wonder if maybe, get a little bit more film on the guy. And he's only 23, so I don't think by any means me saying, has the league figured him out, he's done, but maybe he's now going to need to do a little bit more.
Yeah, he's going to have to adjust a bit to what the defense is throwing at him. So my question for you is, who will the Edmonton starting QB be going forward before Riley comes back? Will it be Franklin or will it be Nichols?
Who will it be or who should it be? Because I think those are two different questions. Who will it be? Probably
Yes.
Matt Nichols. My understanding, at least from what was tweeted out earlier or yesterday, is that he was taking the first team reps in practice and he's probably going to start against the Ticats. Who should it be? In my opinion, it should be James Franklin. I know he's a rookie and I know we just talked about a rookie quarterback and how he was, getting figured out by the league, but I just think that Franklin adds a different dimension than Nichols. Nichols has thrown a ton of interceptions. He's a 6-year veteran in this league. It's not like, oh, well, let's see what he can do. He's been in the league long enough where he should be coming in and playing. Trevor Harris in Toronto has less experience, but sat on the bench and look how well he's played in almost every game that the Argos have played, and he's got them to a 5-2 record. So I'm very hesitant usually to say that rookies should start, but for me, I think he provides just that little something extra, that spark that I think the Eskimos could use on offense, because that's really the only thing holding them back from being considered one of the best teams. Like, they are one of the best teams in the league, but they got this game coming up against Hamilton that we're going to talk about in a bit. And the one thing that separates those two teams is the play of the offense. So the Eskimos need to find something offensively at the quarterback position. And I just don't think Matt Nichols is ever going to be it. So throw Franklin in there and see what you can do. You know, when Riley comes back, he's obviously going to take the reins again. But yeah, I'd go with Franklin.
I'd have to agree with that. You know, Franklin's come in a couple times off the bench and has played well. But you got to see what he does from, you know, having a start under his belt. If I were them, you know, I'm not. But if I were them, I'd throw in Franklin into the fire and see how he does. Now, it might be not the best team to go against right now, you know, throwing him into the fire against Hamilton. But, you know, you got to see what he does, because Nichols just hasn't been, you know, he had maybe one or two good games, but he just hasn't been impressing. And they need to get that offense going if they want to be, you know, in the Grey Cup in November. So I'd go with Franklin.
So moving on to the second game of the week, the Argos had another come from behind win against the Blue Bombers. It just seems like that's what the Argos do. They're at 5-2, but it was the end of the game that had the most interest for me, especially regarding how you would react. What were your thoughts on that play call on 3rd and 1 with about a minute left, where they ran the zone read out of a shotgun formation?
I thought it was terrible. I hate the shotgun handoffs. I don't care if it works. Even if it works, I still get mad at the play. You know, you're handing off the ball 5 yards deep and you need a yard. It just didn't work out for them. That cost them the game. I hate that play. Stop doing that play. Every team in the league, stop doing it. If you're going to be in the shotgun, like, pass the ball. They know it's coming. It's not a secret anymore. I've talked about this before. They knew it was coming and it didn't work again, so just stop doing it.
I'm not as against
I just hate it. I hate it.
I know. But we clarify, you hate it in, like, short yardage situations.
Yes.
On 1st and 10, go nuts, correct?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I agree with you on that.
And Toronto did it too, in the end zone, in the friggin' end zone.
And they gave up a safety.
Yeah.
So I understand, like, doing the plunge at that point maybe takes too much time off the clock, but what doesn't take time off the clock is giving the ball up. So I just thought it was not a smart play call. I don't think Marv made the correct read on it anyway, because he keeps the ball and then he gets tackled in the end zone. Or not in the end zone, in the backfield. So, yeah, just let's get that play call out of the book, right?
Yeah, just don't do it on 3rd and 1 or 2nd and 1, because it usually doesn't work. Okay, my question for you is, do you think T.O. will plummet back to earth when they play the top-tier teams?
I did a little research on this, because after the game, 5-2, everyone's, you know, all excited about the Argos. And here's some stats for you. Their wins have come against teams that are a combined 11-18. Whereas their losses have been against teams that are combined 10-4. And they have yet to play Ottawa, who's 4-3, or Montreal, who's 2-5. And they play Ottawa this week in Toronto. So it might sound harsh, but I think the Argos 5-2 record is a bit of a mirage. I don't think that they should be considered in the top-tier teams. So I think when, you know, they're going to have to play Calgary again. They're going to have to play Edmonton again. They got two more against the Ticats. I would not be surprised if they lost all four of those games. Now, even with losing those games, they're probably good enough to make the playoffs. But they're going to have to beat Ottawa and Montreal. And I'm just not sold on the Argos. And the weird thing is earlier in the season when they were winning games, I was really high on them, thinking that they were the best team in the league. But recently I've changed my tune. I'm not sold on what they're doing right now.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to. They're not putting a full game together. They're winning it late. They have a lot of lulls in their game early on, and then suddenly they just turn it on and win the game late. So they can't be doing that against the top tier teams, because they'll be out of the game by the third quarter. So
like they were against Hamilton.
Yes. Yeah, so I agree that they might come back to earth. You know, they could surprise us, but if the way they're playing now against the lesser teams, if they play it that way against the best teams in the league, they're not going to have a chance. So it'll be really interesting the next stretch of games when they play some of the best teams in the league, see how they do.
Well, here's the thing. They have beaten Winnipeg once, Saskatchewan twice, and they beat Saskatchewan by 2 points in Saskatchewan, 7 points in Toronto, and they just beat Winnipeg by 7. They're tied in the standings with Hamilton. Hamilton beat Saskatchewan in Saskatchewan by 10 and put 52 and 38 up against Winnipeg in the two games they played. So anyone who thinks that this Argos team would have a hope in hell of coming in to Hamilton in a playoff scenario and beating the Ticats is delusional. I know, you know, we're all happy Ticats 10-0 at home and whooping people, but if the Argos are the second best team in the East, I don't really see much resistance to the Ticats getting back to the Grey Cup at this point in time. I know it's a long season and no one's won anything yet, but put these two teams in a playoff scenario and I'm taking the Ticats.
Oh yeah. Every time. And you know, Ottawa has a pretty good record, 4-3, that's pretty good. but you just don't know what you're going to get from them game to game. And Montreal's 2-5. I think they're better than their record. But, you know, if Cato continues to slide, then they're in a lot of trouble too. So Hamilton's far and away the best team in the East right now. And I don't see anyone challenging them at this moment. They could get better as we go along, but right now Hamilton's just way, way better than any team in the East.
Well, I said last week, if you recall, that I wasn't sold on the Red Blacks either, and how they played in Calgary would give me a good indication, and they got beat by over 6 touchdowns. It was 48-3 was the final. Mm-hmm. We're going to touch on that in a second. And now they play Toronto this week, so that to me is going to be a test for both teams. If the Red Blacks go into Toronto and win that game, then I'm more convinced that Ottawa and Toronto are equals than I am that Toronto is equals with Hamilton. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's going to be a good game to watch because it'll reveal a lot what they have.
So speaking of Ottawa, let's move on to their absolute demoralizing crushing at the hands of the Calgary Stampeders, 48-3. Whew.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty for Ottawa.
It was a back, you know, that was the second half of a back-to-back doubleheader on Saturday. The first game was the Ticats game, so it was a bit of a boring night if you were a fan of close, exciting CFL. If you didn't have a rooting interest in the game, you probably weren't very happy with how those games played out. But you know, they were getting beat so badly that the Red Blacks decided to yank Henry Burris. Do you think that was the right move?
Yeah, I do. You know, Henry Burris isn't going to be around forever. He's 40 now. They need to get some reps for the younger guys. So I think it was the right move. You know, give those guys some time when it counts in a regular season game. So I have no problem with that move.
No, I don't think I have a problem with the move. It was interesting. You know, the offense wasn't doing anything, and they just decided, this one's over, let's get him out of there, which is kind of the, you know, the opposite of what the Ticats did against Winnipeg. You know, that game was over as well, but Austin was like, the offense isn't doing anything, we got to keep Claros in there. But that's the difference between having a 26-year-old as a starting quarterback and a 40-year-old, like you said. They needed to get the guys reps. I think it was the prudent move. The game was over, they weren't making a comeback. Let's get the old guy out there and see what the young guy can do. Just one other quick question. How weird did you think it was that Thomas DeMarco was punting? Obviously, I missed the first bit of the game because I was on my way back from Tim Hortons Field, but the first play I saw was a punt by him, and I was wondering why he was punting. Was there any sort of news before that game about why he was the punter and not Anthony Aleeks?
No, I didn't see anything. I didn't see that when he was punting either. So it's similar to when Dave Stalla was punting. It's kind of weird, but yeah, I didn't hear any news about that.
Because I think DeMarco punted like from the start of the game. Like with Stalla, it was, you know, the kicker got hurt. Rogers got hurt in the first game, and you know he's kicked before. I think he's kicked a couple times here in Hamilton. So when he was with the Ticats, so it wasn't exactly a strange thing to see. But at least that was like, oh, Waters, you know, strained his quad or tore his quad, whatever it was that he did. Mm-hmm. In that game against Edmonton in week one. So that was understandable why they needed, why is 88 out there? Oh, well, the kicker got hurt. This was just, I never heard anyone mention anything about it. So
No. It
was kind of strange to see backup quarterback. And then at a time, the starting quarterback by like halftime, essentially out there kicking punts.
Yeah, it was very odd to say the least. Okay, my question for you is, do you think Calgary is hitting its stride and reclaiming its elite status?
Well, I've been hard on the Stampeders. I have not been impressed by them for most of the season. I thought they were lucky to escape a win against Hamilton. You know, they had lost to Ottawa previously. They just hadn't looked good for a team that just was such a well-polished machine last year. That was just, you know, they were what the Ticats are doing this year, the Stamps were doing to teams last year, just going in there and crushing their souls. This game really, I'm not going to say that. That was a thorough beatdown of an outmanned Ottawa team. The Stamps showed how good they can be. I'm going to give it a couple of weeks, though, before I really start getting back on the Stamps bandwagon. I still think they're a good team, don't get me wrong. However, I want to see a couple more really good performances out of them before I'm ready to say that they're back to where they were a season ago.
I really liked what they did against Ottawa. But, you know, Ottawa's not one of the best teams in the league, in my opinion. So you're right. I'm going to have to see what they do in the following weeks. You know, Labor Day is coming up, so that'll be some good games against Edmonton with the back-to-back games. We'll see how they do there. But I liked what how Mitchell played. I thought he was probably his best game of the year. He was running the ball well. He was throwing the ball great. So I think we saw what they can be in this game. Now they just have to put it together for you know, a consecutive streak, and they'll be right at the top with the Ticats as 1-2 best teams in the league.
Well, there it's another team that's doing it without really much of a running game. If you look at it, Matt Walters has not been great. He's been serviceable, but essentially they're saying that Bo Levi Mitchell's got to go out there and win games. And yeah, he seems to be rounding back into form. Like, look, he's still a young kid, 25, I think, 24, 25 years old. Had a lot of success early, and quarterbacks and teams are going to face adversity at some point. To think the Stampeders were going to roll over everybody again this year was, you know, they got the target on their back. Teams are coming out. They're the champs. Teams want to beat them. They are the measuring stick in 2015. And I think we're, you know, they're still obviously going to be a playoff team. They're still going to be in the thick of things come the end of the season for first overall in the West. The problem I have coming up is, like, their next game's against Saskatchewan. So are we really going to be able to find out much from that game? Although, the Riders are coming off a bye. Maybe this could be a bit of a trap game for the Stamps. As you said, they're about to head into that Labor Day and then the Labor Day rematch with Edmonton, which I really wish Mike Riley was playing, because I think we'd get a much better indication of how good both those teams are if Riley was healthy. But I'm kind of curious to see in a couple of weeks how the Stamps deal with that Edmonton defense in Edmonton, because as I'm going to mention when we get to our Ticats Eskimos preview, that defense at home this season has been unstoppable.
Yeah, they're incredible, just like the Ticats are at home with their defense. So Calgary's about to find out what they're made of. If they lose to Saskatchewan, then we'll be like, whoa, what's going on? You know what I mean?
Someone's going to lose Saskatchewan at some point, though.
Yeah, that's true.
We just have to... That shoe's going to fall, so it's not... The Riders aren't going 0-18, so someone's going to lose, and we're all going to mock them and make fun of them. But we can't be that surprised when it happens, because, again, to lose every game in a season is... That almost never happens. So at some point, someone is going to find a way to make a mistake and get Saskatchewan a win. I don't think it's going to be this week with Calgary. I think they're going to use this game as sort of a launching pad to hopefully put together... Like, if they beat down the Riders, then they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're winning games against teams they're supposed to beat by large margins. And again, if we take this back to Toronto, that's what's not impressing me about the Argos. If they're supposed to be among the league's elite, where are their emphatic victories? They don't have any. Hamilton does. Edmonton does. Calgary now does. Toronto's not in the class with those three, as far as I'm concerned.
No, not yet, at least.
So, Friday night in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Possibly the game of the year so far this season, as the league's two top defenses and, in my opinion, the league's two top teams clash at Commonwealth. And in a bit of a role reversal, I will be watching the game from the comfort of my living room on television, and you, sir, will be with the Horde in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. You're going to the game.
I will be there. I've been to McMahon Stadium. Obviously, I ever win. The Sky Dome, I was at, I went to a Renegades game back in the day. I've been to Montreal Stadium, but not Commonwealth yet. So I'm really looking forward to this. So I'll be with my lovely girlfriend and her parents. So really looking forward to the game. It should be a doozy.
It should be a doozy. So I did a lot of research for the show this week. I don't know what got into me, but before we sort of get into what we think the team needs to do to get a win, I think we can safely say that this one is probably going to be a tight game, because in the last 10 years, the Ticats now unfortunately have lost 8 of the 10 games they've played in Edmonton.
Uh-huh.
But last year they lost by 4. The year before they won by 1. And then 2011 and 2012 were the only 2 years where they weren't really in the game. They lost 35-20 and 28-10. But then 2-point loss, 1-point loss, 5-point loss, 2-point loss, 2-point win, and 6-point loss. Hamilton seems to do just enough to lose in Edmonton. But those games are close, and this is, you know, of all those years from 2005 to last year, this is the best Ticats team that the Eskimos are going to see. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're just finally good enough, if they hang in there and stay in it, that they'll get that win at the end.
I'm hoping that they had it. I mean, I think it was last year that they were right down, like, right at the five yard line,
and yeah, they got stuffed on the last play of the game. So
that was a heartbreaker. But Ticats have a lot of trouble in certain stadiums, Edmonton being one of them. BC being one of them, Montreal being one of them. So, you know, like I said earlier, this is probably the best team that I've seen from the Ticats in years and years. So maybe this is where we get our win in Commonwealth. And hopefully I'll be their good luck charm when I'm there.
I hope so. I was saying this to people I was sitting with at the game and after the game last week, and I said, if Hamilton can get this win, they could very legitimately go on a run where they win 8, 9, 10 in a row. This, mm-hmm. to me, is the last of the tough games that they play until Edmonton comes here in mid-September, and then they play Calgary again at the beginning of October. The thing with those games, though, is that they're in Hamilton, and Hamilton in Hamilton is nearly unbeatable. Actually, no, not even nearly unbeatable. They have been unbeatable. Since Tim Hortons Field's open, they haven't lost. So they're unbeatable in Hamilton. I know at some point that streak will end, but the way they're playing right now, it doesn't seem likely. There's not – this is one of the – this is probably the last really tough game that they have on their schedule until the playoffs. If you really look at who they have to play – and more specifically, where they have to play them. I'm not saying the Ticats are going to win the rest of the games this season and finish 16-2, but if they can get this win, we could be looking at a team that wins 13, 14 games this year, and I don't think the Ticats have ever won 13 seasons. I think their best record was 12 wins in 98 or 99, I think. That's their most win totals in a year. I think this team, with a win on Friday, has the chance to surpass that win total, but they got to get the win.
Yeah, well, this is what we've been waiting for. You know, the 9-9 thing every year was, you know, it's better than having a losing record, but, you know, you just wanted that team to be, you know, you wanted that record to be a 12-6, 13-5, even a 14-4. It's just, you want to have that confidence going into the playoffs, and if they win this game, they'll be 6-2, and that's a pretty damn good record right there. I'm stoked that they're 5-2 right now, but if they get to 6-2, thumbs up to that.
It's not going to be easy. We're going to get into some stuff as to what the Eskimos do well and what Hamilton will need to do to get this win. So this would be a really solid win if these guys could go in there and get the W. And like you said, yeah, those 9-9 seasons are a lot better than, you know, the 3-15 ones we dealt with, but I think we're finally looking at a team that has put it together in all facets of the game and are ready to be considered the league's elite team. They're doing it all, and I'm ready to finally be able to, you know, when I, you know, there's always questions around the they squeaked in at 9-9 and made the playoffs, and mm-hmm. and they got lucky getting to the Grey Cup and all that junk that we've been forced to hear the last couple of years because the East has been terrible and the Ticats have not been good to start the season. This, I think, is finally the year where we're going to be able to say, going into the Grey Cup, the Ticats, if they make it, are the favorites.
Yeah, it's year three of Austin, and this is his team totally now. Like, no questions about it, and he's built one hell of a team. So you want to get into what we think they have to do to win this game?
Sure. My big thing offensively, if we'll start with the offense, is keeping Zach Kolaros protected.
Yeah.
Edmonton defense is, they lead the league in sacks. I believe they're tied with the Ticats in team interceptions or turnovers. I think the Ticats are above and beyond in turnovers, but I think the Eskimos are second in that. This is a defense in Edmonton that if they're not in first in a category, then they're second behind Hamilton. And last time the Ticats were in Edmonton, Zach Kolaros did not get protected, and we lost him for 6 weeks. So yes. I think that's the key to this game is keeping Zach upright.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think they got to – you got to do some screen passes to counteract that rush from the Eskimos. You know, get them worried about those things. You got to keep Kolaros up. Kolaros has to make quick decisions because he's not going to have a lot of time. Throw the ball away if need be. Don't take that long loss. Don't throw interceptions. Just if you're under pressure and there's nothing there, just toss it away and don't allow turnovers. You know, if you don't give the Eskimos points on defense, their offense isn't exactly on fire right now. So if you don't, if you don't allow turnovers and don't give the defense points, then we should be winning this game.
Yeah, I think they need to be a little methodical in what they do. They've relied a lot on the big play defensively, especially. Mm-hmm. But offensively, when you look at them, you know, like we mentioned earlier, they've had a couple games where they've had some long bomb touchdowns. You know, they get the big plays from Speedy B. Not that those things are bad, but I think maybe if you are able to put together, the Cats can put together, you know, 10, 12, 13 play drives and sort of keep the crowd out of it by, you know, picking up first downs on second and five. And the Ticats, I believe, are the best team in the league at picking up first downs on second down. So keep plugging away, and if you got to take 7-yard plays every play to work down the field. They have the receivers and the players to do it. So like, be methodical and get that crowd out of the game, because I think those guys are going to be whipped into a frenzy, because as much as Hamilton and Edmonton don't really have a rivalry, I actually find that, you know, Esks fans and Ticats fans seem to be really cordial with one another. Maybe they sort of see similarities in their teams. That crowd's going to be loud because they are going to want to really disrupt what the Ticats do on offense. So yeah, just take it slow and don't force things and just work solid. Solid plays. Give me 7-8 yards a play and I'll be happy.
Really wear down that defense, you know, make them tired.
Yeah, and then run that tempo out. The Cats have been running the up-tempo, no-huddle offense a lot when they've tired down teams. So maybe then, you know, after you get those defensive linemen not being allowed to sub out, then you take your shot downfield, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Now, on defense, pretty simple for me. Just do what they've been doing. Send the pressure, get Nichols, throwing interceptions. It's pretty much it.
Yeah, I was on the Eskimo Empire podcast. We recorded that Monday night. I'm going to be on their game preview show on Friday. And one of the questions I was asked is, can the Ticats do on defense to be even better? And I started off by saying, nothing? Like, what? Yeah. They don't really do anything poorly. The one area that they're less than great in is pass yards allowed a game, but some of that might be due to the fact that they get out to such large leads that teams are forced to throw and not run.
Yeah.
But like you said, exactly, do what they've been doing. Stop the run. Shakir Bell has played really well. Chad Simpson had a good game a couple weeks ago against BC. So don't allow them to establish any run game, which I don't necessarily think will be a problem. And yet, you're right, force Nichols into turnovers. He is tied for the league with 9 interceptions. And the guy he's tied with, they just played last week in Travis Lule. So they get pressure on him, and Nichols is forced to make quick decisions. We could have another defensive touchdown on our hands. It's really hard talking about this defense without just being like, just do what you do, man. Like, go out there and crush people.
Yeah, and you know, they've been getting pressure without the blitzes. You know, with the defensive line, Hickman and Norwood are really stepping their game up. So it's a joy to watch.
It really does look like that 3-sack game that Hickman had was sort of his breathe a sigh of relief. I finally got the sack, and now I'm just ready. He's just ready to do what Hickman did those couple of seasons he was here before he went to the NFL.
Him and Norwood are quite the tandem.
Yeah, and then you get Brian Hall and Ted Laurent, who for my money is the best Canadian player in the league, not named Andrew Harris right now, and bar none, far and away, the best interior defensive lineman, especially as a Canadian, that there is in the CFL right now. He is just, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, he's a monster.
My friend that I go to the games with is always surprised by how quick he is. Ted Laurent's a big dude.
Yeah.
So just, you know, I know he's at the end of his contract and he's due for a massive raise. I hope he's here for a few more years because he is, he's just awesome.
Yeah, we got to keep that D-line together if we want to string together a couple Grey Cup winning teams.
Oh, a couple Grey Cup winning teams. You're making my heart pump. I love it. Just the idea that we're talking the Ticats and Grey Cup. I know we've been the last 2 years. But all those years that it was, you know, playoff losses and terrible records, just to feel that this team is now a consistent Grey Cup contender, it makes me smile.
Yeah, and you never know what can happen in the playoffs, you know. I'm not saying we're going to make it guaranteed this year, you know, anything can happen, so just feel confidence in this team right now.
Yeah, it's hard not to, you know what I mean? It's hard not to. Let's see if we can string together some bold predictions that are, if not, you know, dead on, at least pretty darn close to right. What is your big prediction for this week?
Okay, this is pretty bold. The Ticats are going to put up 50 on the X this week.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but I think that maybe the defense can get a couple touchdowns, and then the offense can get a couple. Maybe Speedy B takes one back, and we get to 50. But yeah, it's bold. I know it's bold. It might be even crazy, but that's my bold prediction this week.
Wow, I thought I was going bold with what I'm about to say, but that is, you know, they are the only team to score 50 this year, and they've done it twice, and they did it once on the road against Winnipeg, and you know, they knocked Drew Willey out of that game and dealt with Brian Brohm for most of it. And wow, 50 points. I would have said you were going bold if you would have said 40. So
yeah, I know.
All right. So mine is now seems a little less now that after what you put, but I am going to say that the Ticats will score multiple offensive touchdowns. And the reason I say that is the Eskimos so far this season have allowed 8.3 points per game at home. And they have not allowed an offensive touchdown at Commonwealth in the regular season since week 12 of last year. That's where I'm sort of coming from, is that the Ticats will find the end zone offensively more than once. Here's to you, and here's hoping that we get these right. And if they put up 50 on the Eskimos, the Ticats are 6-2, and we might as well just do the show drunk, because we're going to be partying. So that's that. Woo!
Yeah,
you are a gutsy man.
I am.
That's it for that. Let's move on to the question, shall we?
Okay. Yeah. First one's from Matt Kane's Eagles. Do you see this game as a test for our D? James Franklin, for a rookie, has impressed so far. No. I don't know. You go ahead.
A test for the D.
No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You mumbled it in the background. Yeah. Not really. I don't know how much James Franklin's going to play, if at all. Like I said earlier, looks like Matt Nichols is going to start. So the Hamilton defense on the road has not been as impressive as they have at home, but they've still been pretty darn good. Like, they lost to Montreal. They only allowed 17 points. They lost to Calgary, and they only allowed, what was the final of that, like 25, 23 or something to that effect?
Yeah, something like that.
Again, I don't think they've allowed 30 points so far in any game this year. So, no, I don't really see this as much of a test for Hamilton's defense, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I see it more of a test for their offense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I don't see, the Eskimos' offense doesn't scare me, so I don't see it much of a test for them either. All right, the second one is from Kane's Eagles as well. Do you think stopping Bell is the number one key to victory?
I don't know if it's the number one key. They stopped the run so well. They played Terrell Sutton when he was the league's top back and held him to, like, 2 yards rushing. They played Saskatchewan when Jerome Messam was the league's leading rusher, and they held him to, like, under 30 yards or just under 40. I can't remember what the stat. I don't have him in front of me. But and then this last week against Andrew Harris, came in league's best rusher, and they held him to under 40 yards rushing. So Bell is a dynamic player, and he's done some really great things, but he hasn't done them against a defense like that of the Tiger Cats. So while, keeping Bell in check is definitely going to help secure victory, I think the key defensively is doing exactly like we said in the preview of the game, doing what they've been doing, get turnovers and just force Edmonton into mistakes. And if they do that, that'll be how they get the win.
Yeah, I think it's a big key, stopping Bell, because the passing game doesn't really scare me with the Eskimos. And if they can get Bell going, then maybe the passing game could open up. But I don't think it's the number one key. I think that they will contain Bell just fine. So
yeah, until a team rushes for more than 70 yards with one player against the Ticats, we don't really even need to talk about the run defense. Uh-huh. And then needing to be sort of if they stop player X running the football, will they win the game? They've stopped every player so far running the ball. So to me, it's just like we said, this is probably now the third or fourth time I said, yeah, just keep doing what they're doing, and that's how they'll get the win.
All right, at Elon Eric, have the Ticats planned the Grey Cup route around the city yet?
Absolutely not. It's only week, what, 9? They've only played 7 games. Look, we're all excited. I know you're excited. I'm excited. Ticat fans are jubilant at how great this team has played. But we're also not idiots. We know that the Grey Cup is not won in August. There's still lots of football left to be played, and anything can happen. So, no, the route is not planned yet.
No, it's way too early for that. Anything can happen in the playoffs. Even there could be a game in Hamilton, and there could be terrible weather, and a team not as good as Hamilton could come in there and beat them, on a fluke. So no routes planned so far, I'd say. Okay, at CFL Ticats fan. I'm going to the game in Edmonton and found out it's social media night. What should I tweet? Tweet whatever you want, bud.
Here's what I'm saying. The Eskimos have been putting out these tweets about what song should they play during the game. Bombard them with Ticats are humming. They're going to say no, but it might make for a nice story. I know a friend of mine last year, the Argos do the same thing. Tweet us with Argos game day music tweets or whatever the hashtag was. And she tweeted to them, Ticats are humming, and they responded, denied. It was kind of funny. So do that. Just tweet at them incessantly. Ticats are humming. Ticats are humming. Just see if you get a response, because I think that'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, that'd be good if they played that one. I'd be pretty happy with that.
I'd be pretty damn surprised.
Yeah, I would be too. Last one I have is that TXA 2002. Do any of you have Twitter beefs with any other podcasters? All of them. They're all bastards.
See, I'm the other way. I've, I was on the Two and Out podcast. I was on the BC Lions Den podcast. As I said earlier, I'm going to be on the Eskimo Empire podcast. I'm sure if the Bleed Red Blacks guys ask me to be on, I'll be on that one. I'm a bit of a media whore, so I'm kind of everywhere. Hey, if there's someone out there with an Alouettes podcast that listens here and wants me on to talk about the game next week, I'm free. But yeah,
the Blue Bombers have a new one up.
They do at Three Down Nation. Yeah, we don't play the Bombers the rest of the year, so I'm not sure if they're ever going to want me to be on there. Maybe not till next season, but or maybe not at all. For they might think I'm a jerk. Who knows? It's all in good fun, you know. Like I love all the other shows out there. Any CFL talk to me is good. So. Yeah, tongue in cheek, we beef with them, I guess, you know, because we're the best. Just the way it is, you know. Tie Cats are humming, Tie Cats are great. And if you're doing a Tie Cat podcast and the Tie Cats are the best team in the league, I guess that makes you the best podcast in the league, does it not?
Yeah, it does. That's, you know, obviously. But yeah, the more CFL talk, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah,
and there's so many good shows out there, and everyone's doing their best. And I'm just surprised that there's not one in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, that is very surprising. With their rabid fan base, you'd think there'd be at least one.
Yeah, maybe they, you know, in Saskatchewan, maybe they just don't have the technology or, like, the English language skills to actually put one out, you know.
Oh boy.
Got to get a shot in at them. Yeah. You know, I've been too nice to them the last few weeks. Let's you know, they are 0-7, so what are they going
to
come back with?
They probably don't listen to us because just hatred for you.
Yeah, that's true. So no one's going to hear this anyway in Saskatchewan. Yeah. But anyway, so I have a question. Our buddy Joe Pritchard, guy I met at the Winnipeg game, guy who's in our fantasy league, I'm 8-0 in our fantasy league now. Thank you very much. I got to find a way to get that in the show every week. So until I lose, I'm going to be pumping those tires. Anyway, he asks, this is not a Ticat question. This is about the benching of John Bowman and Gerald Brown. It looks like they're not going to play again this week, and he simply says, who should trade for those two, and what would be good value?
Yeah, the Bowman benching really surprised me. You know, he was having a good year. He's at near the top of the league with sacks. So I heard Gerald Brown was having trouble with the new rules, you know, keeping up with receivers with no contact after 5 yards, so that's not as surprising. Not sure who's looking for a defensive lineman right now, so maybe you'd have a better time shedding some light on that question.
That's a bit tough. I kind of was talking to Joe about this on Twitter even after he asked the question. It's, you know, Bowman is a defensive end, and you know, it's kind of tough. You know, trades in football mid-season are usually, they don't really add much value to the team that they go to during that season. It's usually for the next year. You know, obviously there are exceptions. Arlen Bruce, when he was traded to Hamilton mid-season, came in here and was awesome. So it's tough. You know, defensive end, though, is one of those positions where a guy can come in with very limited knowledge of the playbook. And if he's just told, just go rush the passer, then, you know, which is what Bowman does very well. I'm not sure if there's a team out there that needs him, though. You know what I mean? Like, to trade for one of those two guys would be for a team that thinks they're just on the cusp of being, like, they're a step below. Maybe they're a playoff contender and they want to turn into a Grey Cup contender. Maybe Ottawa would be a team that might be interested in acquiring John Bowman. But even then, their defensive line has played decently well. Now, what they would give up to me, it would have to be a mid to late round draft pick. You're not giving up a first round pick for a 30 plus year old defensive end. It sucks that he's on the bench. I find that really odd.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if he's got much trade value, despite how good he is.
No, I think it'd be wise for Montreal to hold on to him and just, I don't know the reason why he's on the bench. Maybe it's off the field stuff, but it's a real question mark for me. So I think they might keep him, and he might be starting in a couple weeks. So maybe he gets traded, but I don't think he will.
So I guess that's it then, eh? No more questions?
Nope.
Well, enjoy the game out in Edmonton. I can't wait to have you come back next week and give us some, kind of the rundown of what it was like to be a Commonwealth, because I have never been there either. So kind of curious as to what you sort of get out of being there.
Yeah, I'm pumped too. You know, I think Commonwealth is a really nice stadium, and I'm really excited to go there. And you know, they have a real nice facility there, so I'm pumped to check it out.
All right, so as always, don't forget that you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You know, leave a comment or rate us. We'd always like to get feedback.
Yeah, tell us Tell me I suck. I haven't got that yet.
You haven't got that yet?
Oh, you suck. I don't, you know. I was kind of expecting that. I haven't got it yet.
No, maybe you don't suck.
Yeah, I guess maybe not.
Oh, well, that's nice.
I suck. Come on, man.
Yeah, and if you want to have your questions answered, you can hit Mike up on Twitter. Give him your Twitter handle as always, pal.
Mike_Ticats.
Or myself, at @JoshSmith_82. Again, you want another way to leave a question if you don't have Twitter is to throw it in the comment section on 3downnation.com. And so that's it for Podski Wee Wee this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.